Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Hello, everyone. You've tuned into episode 610 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This week, we're taking a jaunt through some short topics in the world of amateur radio, Linux, and open source, and a mixture of the two. Actually, that would be three, I guess. But anyway, but before we get into that, we should let you know who we are. Wow. For our silent key, Russ, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD. So as usual, we are going to start this podcast with finding out what we've done this week, whether that be ham radio or computers or maybe even hedonism. We kind of always want to get a little update on what's going on. And I will I'll let Cheryl start for this week.
Let's see here. This week, I have had a somewhat horrific jaunt through computer-related stuff. Russ put up some Govee lights the week of Christmas, maybe the week before, on a building. And we had a little wannabe mini blizzard that hit a couple of weeks ago on a Sunday. And we had a couple of power blips. And suddenly, part of those lights stopped working. So of the 144 feet of lights that he put up, we have six lights. And those are
six bulbs.
six bulbs. Yeah, that's all that's working right now. And those are the six closest to the plug-in. And I nice. I have beat on those things. I beat on them all day today. I started at like 8 o'clock this morning with, you know, I had already removed them from the app because it was giving me a consistent error message that was driving me up the wall. So I removed them from the app, but today I went in and, you know, unplugged them for about 10 or 15 minutes and futzed around doing some other stuff, plugged them back in, tried to re-add them to the app, which I was accomplished just fine, and got all that set up and ready to go again and went outside and hit turn on my lights and nothing happened. So I peeked my head, or I was on the front side of the building, so I peeked my head around to the side closest to where they're plugged in at, and yeah, six bulbs are working and none of the rest of them.
So there's a section there in the app that shows like the settings for like the number of segments. Is that like set up?
It is set at segment three. Yeah, three segments. So,
and they're only six light bulb segments, or the bigger than that?
No, they're bigger than that. I don't know how many is on a string or on a section. Probably, I'm guessing probably 15 or 20. So I'm thinking that maybe half of the string, give or take, is working.
Oh, so it could be like an actual physical failure. So like the
right, yeah.
It could have taken some shrapnel from the wind or the snow.
I guess maybe, yeah. But it's, you know, that like the first six or seven bulbs are working, then nothing after that. So, you know, I presented a question to Bill today. So if anybody knows this answer, please feel free to help out, because Google has not been my friend. But, you know, my question to Bill was, you know, like with Christmas tree lights, if you've got a bulb that burns out, the rest of them continue to stay lit. But is that the case with the Govee lights?
Yes.
Because I don't know if 2.5 strings of them are now toast, or if because we have half of a string that's not working, there's not electricity making it to the other two strings.
Yeah, my theory would be that it's either the segment count is not matching up with that particular model of lights. So like you say three segments, but it should say how many light bulbs it has. And hopefully that's relatively close. If it's not close, it could be like detecting the actual type of a device wrong, which normally by turning on and off for, you know, 15 minutes or so, it does reset it. Other than that, it's most likely like an actual physical disconnection of the wire. Because they don't really go bad like that. So if you lose one LED out of the whole segment, the whole thing doesn't go off. It doesn't work that way. So like they should work pretty independently of it, because you can actually program each light bulb independently, and you know, including off status and stuff like that. So I Probably it's either configuration mismatch or it's a physical problem. So there's the two items that I would think would be the only directions you can go. So, I mean, obviously in the app, you can kind of look at the configuration and verify. I said, yeah, okay, it's looks like 100 foot of things. There's a one bulb every foot, you know, should be 60 bulbs or whatever. You know, do the math and make sure that the bulb count matches the application settings count for the bulbs in the segments.
Right. It actually, apparently there's 15 bulbs per segment. So 45 bulbs total. It is down as a 3-string. So that's got the 45 bulbs. I've checked the individual lights to make sure that they're all on or all off or whatever. And yeah, when I tell it to turn them on, they all come on, they all go off. So
well, you're going to have to liquor up one of those young kids and have them run up there and take a look at it.
Apparently, yeah. So but
there's a bottle of Jim Beam up there somewhere. You just go ahead and find it.
Yeah.
It's right around that 6th light bulb. So start there and work your way over.
Well, luckily, most of the bulbs are basically reachable from the ground.
Oh, cool,
because they're just around the edge of the shop. Of course, you know, they go up the rafter and you know, up the peak and down the peak in the front. And then Russ ran them to go along the roof edge of the back part of the shop that's
eight feet higher
or whatever. Yeah. So
should be able to get it with a ladder. I bet you, rubbed against the eave there or something like that. And it's broken the wire.
Right. Yeah. It's the ones that are down, like, right. You know, as I said at the beginning,
right, and out the little window by the
right. Yeah. Yeah. And those are the ones, yeah, you know, the plugins on the side facing our house. So it wasn't, you know, and there's a plug-in like right inside that window. I was like, oh, perfect, you know, but yeah. So, but you know, we had bands out here doing practice today and they were all like, do you want us to get up on the roof? I'm like, no, just let me call Govee tomorrow and see if they can help me. You know, can give me some answers regarding this, you know, because like, you know, I don't have which I know that they're probably under warranty. I don't really have an issue with buying another string of lights from Amazon if it's just the one string. But I don't want to buy one string and have it be all 3 strings that need replaced or whatever. So that's been fun. And then, you know, the great Raspberry Pi battle yesterday. So,
well, yeah, tell me about this. You got multiple Raspberry Pis, one plugged into each TV? Or?
Yeah, we've got 2 TVs in the game room that we use for a program called blindvalet.com. And it basically counts down the time between hands. And then at the end tells you, you know, like first place gets X amount of money, whatever. But Russ in the past, typically in the past, I was doing the cooking while Russ got things like that set up. But he would always have it up and running when everybody got here. Yesterday, I started about 2 hours before the poker game, trying to get it up and running. We've got a keyboard and a mouse that handles multiple devices. So I figured out which one went, you know, what setting went to what TV.
Right.
Because he's got Raspberry Pis on each TV to run this. But I would be able to get, you know, a web page up. But then I couldn't get it to let me enter like blindvalet.com
So you couldn't get it to the address bar, yeah.
Right, yeah. And I sat there, and it would be like the mouse was frozen, but then suddenly it wouldn't be frozen again, which led me to believe that the Raspberry Pi was just acting up. And I never could. I was just focusing on the main TV. The other TV is kind of a secondary one. And I was like, no, let's get the main one up and running first. Then I'll futz with the second one. And I never got around to the second one because I was fighting the main TV that whole time.
Well, if they're anything like the one I have here, because they are Logitech, right? So,
yes.
Yeah, the mouse, I would definitely charge up because it's probably a chargeable, but the keyboard is
apparently it's not.
Oh, it's not?
No, it says it has a two-year battery life, and we bought it in April of 24. So I know it's getting, and I kind of wondered if that was part of the problem as well. Because I was looking at it going, okay, where do I plug this in at? How do I get the cover off to put batteries in it?
Yeah.
So I logged into Amazon and it was like, oh no, this is a non-serviceable mouse.
Oh, that's a disposable mouse?
Yeah, but it was a $60 mouse. It's like, Russ, what have you done? You know, so
I've never seen one of those. That's really peculiar.
Yeah, it's the Logitech like M720 or something like that. Let me get back to my Amazon card here and I can tell you.
The Triathlon Multi-Computer Wireless Mouse.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. Well, that's something. Oh yeah, battery life. It says it takes one AA.
Okay, then I got to figure out how in the world to get into
the how to open the shell.
Yeah. Because I could, like I didn't see any screws.
Yeah, on anything. The bottom, it looks like that back panel slides out. It has like a little thumb, kind of like a little divot thing, and you can run your thumb against it and pull it back, like right next to where the
right. Light, yeah, no, light and is. I saw that, but I couldn't figure out how to get it open.
Yeah, I think you push it down and pull it okay. back. So yeah, I was about to say that can't be disposable mouse. That just wouldn't make any sense.
Right. Well, and as I said, I was like, you know, because it says 2-year battery, and I was like, oh no, surely he didn't buy a mouse that was a throwaway.
That would be really weird.
Yeah, $53.89 apparently is what he paid for it. It's now $43, but I was like, bah. So. Oh, so yeah, already. So I'll go try to pry that apart and see if that's part of the issue. But the keyboard wasn't working either, which, you know, it's been 5 months since it's been used. So yeah.
battery. Always replace the batteries first, and hopefully that'll work. Because redoing the Bluetooth on those things is kind of a pain in the butt too. Hopefully you don't have to go through that. So anything else you want to push in this little corner here?
No. Other than that, it's been. Kind of been a quiet week, so I haven't done a lot of cooking or anything. So, yeah.
Awesome. Myself, let's see, I moved my antenna, and now my problems are worse. although I, you know, it definitely hears better, but I put the ballon closer to where my ham shack is, and yeah, I'm just I have the it's the long wire one with the ballon on it. What's the one Russ has? I have the same one.
What is the name of that?
Alpha antennas. It's an alpha antennas.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's like the alpha antenna senior. Yeah, the alpha NFED. Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is, it's too close to the house. It's too close to my shack. And before, the end of the antenna was too close to the shack. And on certain bands, it would kind of get in here. But now, yeah, every time I key up, I can hear it, lighting up all the speakers and everything else in here because I have way too many electronics in my little corner of the shack. So all that work was for nothing. I'm just going to move it to the further into the backyard. I just have to kind of make a place for it to be and then run the wire to wherever. It doesn't really matter. So that'll be a project for next week. I also made a video. Hopefully some people saw it. I see the views have started kicking up on YouTube's of the Amarchi desktop. Kind of the problem I was seeing with that with related to using ham radio software that has dialogue windows. I couldn't get the dialogue windows to behave like Windows. So that was a bit of a problem. Demonstrated on the video, and I will give you a spoiler alert. That box is not running Omarchi anymore. I've moved on to a different thing to test different software at this point, because I was also running the Decodium software, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So, but it was still fun to kind of just throw that short video out there. It's only like a little 6-minute video. So if you get a chance, go check it out. Look at it, you know. Laugh at me, whatever. It's funny. Real quick. I like doing those little short videos. I have a hard time doing like recording a bunch of stuff and then going back over and then trying to script it all out. And yeah, I'm not that kind of YouTuber. So I'd rather just do it live, fix it in post and pray for the best. So that's what we do in the podcast here. So,
well, yeah.
Other than that, just lots of theater stuff. And just trying to get everything done. I've been going all over the place. So let's get into our amateur radio topics. And why don't you take the first one?
All righty then. So our first one this week is the FCC warns Pittsburgh amateur radio operator for 911 interference. Yeah, this doesn't sound good at all. No. The Federal Communications Commission has sent a notice of licensed operation and harmful interference to an amateur radio operator in Pittsburgh regarding transmissions on a 911 emergency services channel from a handheld transceiver. Oh, boy. Last summer, the FCC received a complaint from the Allegheny County, Pennsylvania Emergency Services concerning interference with one of its UHF T-band emergency communications channels. The interference affected the county's West EMS dispatch channel on 470.435. After the agents notified Kunston of the issue, he produced a Beifang BTech UV Pro handheld radio. This story actually came from Radio World. And people wonder why we can't get into 911.
Yeah, and I thought it was funny. Like, yeah, as soon as I got to the Beifang, I'm like, yeah, that's enough. We'll just stop there at the story. Yeah. We don't need to go into any more detail of anything else. You know, just a tongue-in-cheek pick on Beifang as the culprit. Those things get people in trouble. They use them as FRS radios and GMRS radios and everything else that they're not supposed to and they're not licensed for and stuff like that. So take warning. People are listening, and you will be found. So don't do that. And yeah, use a better radio than a Beifang. Come on, you know.
Go buy a Yaesu or something.
Yeah. The Yaesu that won't transmit out of the band, you know, and stuff like that, unless it's been modded or something like that. Anyway, let's go in the next story. We have Hamvention announces award recipients. I thought I'd add this in here because, hey, we're going to Hamvention, and it's getting closer every month. Yeah, so let's see. We have the Technical Achievement Award going to Robert Familio, K3RF, a very familiar name. He has spent almost 60 years in amateur radio, blending technical expertise, legal knowledge, and leadership in emergency communications. He was licensed at 13, and he has been, let's see, he was elected to the ARRL's leadership for multiple terms as a EPA Eastern Pennsylvania Section Manager, the Atlantic Division Vice Director, and later the Director. And if you want to learn a lot more about him and some of his stuff, he championed the members' rights, transparency, and a representative governance. The ICQ podcast did a nice little segment interview with him. And we'll probably hear more and more about that. But I highly recommend you going and checking out the ICQ podcast for that. I think I mentioned it like a couple of episodes ago that they did that on. So a good interview between Frank, Bill Barnes, and Dan here in the chat room. So check that out. Also, we have the Amateur of the Year Award going to Dr. Jose Otis Vincennes and November Papa 4 Golf. And he was licensed at the age of 16. And let's see here. What do we got here? He is past president of the Puerto Rico Amateur Radio League in 2012. And during the 2017 Puerto Rico hurricane disasters, NP4G helped coordinate amateur radio emergency communications across the eastern Puerto Rico following the Hurricane Jorge, or George's. I guess Jorge would be fine, right? It is a Spanish name after all. NP4G is now the president of the International DX Association and most recently was part of the All Kilo Papa 4 team to act a very rare Descend de Setio Island with an amazing technology as Kilo Papa 5, stroke November Papa 3, of Victor, India. We also have a special achievement award going to Martha Fell, November 3, Quebec, Bravo Echo, and Joe Fell, Whiskey 3, Golf Mike Sierra. Martha and Joe Fell's journey began in 1966 when Joe earned his novice license. Shortly thereafter, he met Harry I. Davis, who mentored him for 4 years, who's now a silent key. Harry taught him to think critically, design circuits, and execute projects with precision. His guidance was life-changing, and Joe pledged to honor his request to give back to others, just as Harry has done for them. Their program's reach has grown significantly over the decades. And in 1976, Joe designed and built a repeater for his mentor's radio station, which remains operational 50 years later, serving a group of approximately 85 operators. Their weekly technical net has become a primary resource for both new and seasoned amateurs, including many professional electrical engineers. So very good. And then we got, of course, the Club of the Year is going to the Long Island CW Club. There we go. Long Island CW Club is an online Morse code training community built to help everyday hams become confident and proficient in CW operators. We combine the standards with welcoming culture. We teach real operating skills. We treat people with respect, and we keep learning for fun. The LICW offers structured classes from beginner through advanced. Hey, this might be something I can take out. A wide range of topical forums and practical resources that will help students move from copying characters to true conversational flow. And all of this you can find on the Hamvention website, and you can actually go to Hamvention and probably watch these get awarded in person. So there you go.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely everybody needs to come to Hamvention anyway. But
yes, yeah. Come to Hamvention. This is just one more reason.
Yeah.
Awards, all the award dinners.
Yeah. They can come see us. Yeah.
They come see us. Yeah. That'd be great. And then I found this story for you. I was thinking of you when I found this.
Yeah, I was just reading this going, huh, I wonder if this is in here for a reason. So our next story is about Hamdeck. And it says that Hamdeck playing cards are a portable reference system for amateur radio operators. The deck focuses on practical lookups used during real operating sessions. It includes band plan summaries by region, common calling frequencies, digital mode frequency references, operating reminders and checklists, and compact lookup tables for common station tasks. And of course, Bill got this information from the Hamdeck website. So
now, I don't think these decks are available yet. I think they have a submission page for like more information and stuff like that. So I don't have a price or anything else like that. But they do look pretty cool. At least the mock-ups and everything else they have of the cards is pretty neat. The website in general is pretty good and has a bunch of useful information on it for hams in general. I would say they have a nice little band plan thing that you can dynamically switch, like what mode and what band you want to look at, and it'll show you the layout of, like, you know, the common use frequencies, the CW sections, the sideband sections and stuff like that. So pretty useful website overall, probably just worth a quick gander at that at your leisure. But the playing cards I thought was a cool little idea. So who knows, maybe we'll see this product at Hamvention. I don't know, I didn't see any announcement of that, but it'd be cool.
Yeah, it says you can sign up to get launch updates for deck previews, release timing, and new tool updates through their homepage. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, pretty neat little fun gadgetry stuff. And that brings us over to open source and Linux topics. And the first one here we have for you is that Ubuntu 26.04 beta is now available to download. The beta release of Ubuntu 26.04 LTS, the Resolute Raccoon, is now available for download, arriving a month ahead of its planned stable release on April 23rd, 2026. This version runs on the latest Linux kernel, 7.0, release candidate, and features the new GNOME 50 desktop environment, along with a new default system monitoring utility called Resources. Visual updates include colorful new folder icons, a fully opaque Ubuntu dock, a new default wallpaper, and a refreshed boot spinner animation. Wow, a boot spinner animation. That's worth talking about. You shouldn't have one. It should be so fast that you don't even see it booting.
Exactly.
The release also introduces OpenJDK 25, which I hear is part of the requirements of the latest Minecraft. So be on the lookout for that. Cool. And as the default Java runtime, and it has an updated Mesa 26.0.2, and includes AI packages like AMD Rock'em and NVIDIA CUDA. I guess we'll talk about that later here soon. Availability. So here's some key info for it. The ISOs will be available right now for Intel and AMD 64-bit, generic ARM, Raspberry Pi, and some of the beta flavors like Lubuntu, Zubuntu, and Kubuntu are also released. Note that the beta is not officially supported yet. Users should back up their data and test in a virtual machine, as beta software may break their file managers or require driver tweaks. There are some known issues. There are some software and updates utility is not pre-installed, so that means you won't be getting updates. You'll have to manually run updates from the command line. And then some specific flavors like I think Ubuntu Mate and Ubuntu Kylin, they don't have the beta images out for those particular flavors yet. at least as of the posting of this article. And installing updates on a beta version will automatically upgrade to the system to the final stable release when it launches. So if you do happen to use this as your daily driver and the LTS gets released, it should update automatically to that with no issue whatsoever. And this came to us from OMG Ubuntu.
Bill, I'm thinking that maybe Manjaro's like gonna go bye-bye soon.
Well, you're going to be the one installing the next distro on that machine.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I know.
When you're ready to do that, yeah, that's what you want to think about. But you got that big fat hard drive sitting there next to it that you can dump all your stuff off onto.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I guess the last time Russ backed up my computer, he missed a whole bunch of files. The files are there, but the file folders are there, but the content is not. And it was mostly pictures. And I was like, dude, really? So yeah, I'm missing several years of pictures, but
well, it's probably somewhere. It's probably somewhere.
Yeah, it's probably buried somewhere. Just not sure. I'm sure that there's probably a hard drive somewhere in this house that might have it on it, or I don't know. So
yeah, you had those two hard drive plug-in things, the USB ones that we pulled aside and we set in that one box. Yeah. Those are the things that you would use to kind of like you plug it into USB and then you slap the hard drive into it. And then you can read the hard drive. You just mount it, look through it, and then you just, you know, eject it and pull it out and then do another hard drive and stuff like that. Yeah. So you can kind of go through that whenever you feel like you want to go through that. It's you got all the tools you need to do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you didn't get them backed up, I'm going to have to, I don't know, shooting. So. I keep running across stuff going, Russ, really? You're killing me. So, all right, so moving right along, local privilege escalation and snapped. CVE, sorry. Now I see the D. Probably I have not blown up the text in this version of Etherpad. I need to work on that. So CVE-2026-3888. Local privilege escalation on snapd on Linux allows local attackers to get root privilege by recreating snap's private / TMP directory when systemd or systemd temp files is configured to automatically clean up this directory. This issue affects Ubuntu 16.04 LTS, 18.04 LTS, 20.04 LTS, 22.04 LTS, and 24.04 LTS. And this came from the Ubuntu website.
Yeah, this is one of these issues that people just smile with big wide smiles because they hate snapd. And this was a bad bug. It's already been fixed. So make sure your system's been updated. If you're running any of those Ubuntu versions, including anything that's a derivative of those versions, like, I don't know, Linux Mint, Pop OS, many, many others that are all derivatives of the 2404 LTS. So make sure you're running updates, run all your security updates, make sure this particular hole is plugged, especially if you're using snaps. So have at it. Yeah, the next story is YOLO Linux. Now this one is really scary. YOLO Linux is a modern Linux distribution designed from first principles to prioritize user outcomes over system management, featuring a conversational AI agent that replaces the traditional command line. Yeah, if you're not already throwing up in your mouth, this is one to be worried about. Instead of requiring users to memorize commands or configure complex settings, YOLO Linux allows them to describe their intent in plain language. Example, install the browser or connect to the VPN. And an AI agent automatically handles the installation, configuration, and security. Built on the standard Linux 6.12 kernel, it maintains a zero-shell security posture by eliminating direct user access to the terminal, thereby reducing the attack surface while ensuring all operations are logged, auditable, and explainable. This approach aims to make Linux accessible to everyone by removing the learning curve associated with traditional operating systems and administration. I mean, This is like putting Copilot in charge of your Windows PC. No. And apparently this thing breaks if it's not connected to the internet, because it's not running a local model, which I thought was ludicrous and stupid. But anyway, if you want to check this out, run it in a VM and tell me I'm wrong and crazy old man stuff. Yeah. YOLO Linux. Yeah, you only live once.
Yeah, you only live once right after you've hosed your machine. So,
yeah, or the internet doesn't work and you can no longer get into your machine. I don't know.
Right,
this
yeah,
seems yeah. like an extremely bad idea. It's something nobody asked for, but you're going to get.
So. Well, I'm sure there are people out there that would much rather, say, install the browser or connect to the VPN instead of, you know, sitting down and actually typing the commands that they need to type. But it's still, yeah.
Alrighty, that brings us over to our Linux and the Ham Shack topics, and we got a juicy one here. So this came in response to, well, we did a mention of FT2 and Decodium in, what, 3 episodes ago? Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, 607, I believe it was. And I would just finally got to posting all those on Mastodon, and Anno, VK6FLAB, from, of course, the Foundations of Amateur Radio podcast. He let me know that the FT2 and Decodium were under scrutiny due to violations of the GPL. Apparently, there was a nice long Reddit thread, which I have linked here in the show notes, discussing it. The fact that he wouldn't release his notes, and he's, you know, running basically a derivative of FT2, and the fact that. Well, here I'll let Uwe explain it in his comment, which I quoted here in our show notes. This is Dr. Uwe Reese, Delta Golf 2 Yankee Charlie Bravo. He's one of the authors of the WSJTX Improved version. So I know a lot of you use that. But he said, "Hi all." This is a quote. All of this is from him. "I just wanted to let you know that we successfully reverse engineered the FT2 mode into open source. See screenshot below." Okay, you can't see screenshot, sorry. "Apart from the whether an FT2 mode alongside FT4 makes any sense at all, in my eyes, the best answer to the brazen behavior of this Italian group was to simply reverse engineer IU8 LMCs," and he puts that in quotes, kind of like the air quote, "FT2 mode and publish it as open source, just on principle. To take the wind out of his sails, as we say here in the in Germany, of people who obviously have fame and or money primarily in mind. You should know that the history of FT2 goes back to experiments by Joe and Steve in early 2019. At that time, it had a transmission TR cycle of 2.5 seconds. Later, it was introduced as FT4. First with a 5-second TR period, and then with a 7.5-second, because the 5-second, the success rate of the QSOs was not good enough. IU8 LMC introduced his, in quotes again, to emphasize, FT2 mode with slightly modified parameters, a 3.8-second transmission period, and he is free to do so, provided that he clearly states what his, in quotes again, FT2 mode is ultimately based on, and that he publishes the source code. But he refused. Such behavior is not only a violation of GPL v3, it is also the opposite of ham spirit and contradicts Joe's and our open source approach for WSJTX. Furthermore, it is unfair, as his Decodium program is nothing more than a poorly working, in parentheses, fork of our, parentheses now obsolete, joint WSJTX and WSJTX Improved 3.0.0RC1 250915 release. This means that 99.5% of his Decodium software is based on our work. His Decodium program is currently full of bugs, by the way, which I did find in my experimentation with it. Nevertheless, according to the PSK Reporter statistics, almost 4,000 users are already using the FT2 mode within the first 2 weeks of its introduction there. This indicates that there seems to be some interest in the market for such an ultra-fast mode, or maybe you are just bored and urgently needed something new to play with. Hi. Let's see if FT2 proves itself alongside of FT4 or if it's just a short-lived hype. I haven't decided yet whether I'll keep this new mode in WSJTX Improved, But for the reasons mentioned above, I would like to release a new WSJTX improved beta version here soon, where the FT2 mode is included open source and improved beta version soon. Oh, sorry. In the usual WSJTX improved quality way. I'm still in the process of optimizing a few things, but basically it's already working well. Stay tuned. So, and by the time I read that, I'd found that he'd already released version 3.10 of WSJTX Improved, which I did install. And yeah, it worked fine. And the only thing I could say in general about these, well, A, the whole idea of them doing the FT2 mode without releasing the source code, since it's based obviously on GPLv3, is a violation of the GPLv3. You have to release the source code. That's why you need to be careful when you do derivative work like that. And you probably don't want to call it, FT mode, because that's that is legitimately attributed to them. That's why FT8 call had to get changed to JS8 call for the same reason. Because you can't, wouldn't want you to use their sort of trademarked names for that. My discussion back with Anno was, I wasn't really aware of it. You know, when I threw the topic in, I just kind of ran across it and found it and stuff like that. So I didn't do a lot of due diligence, which, you know, we don't really do when we go look for something and we find something new and shiny and just want to show it off. So yeah. My bad on not doing a little bit more research on that and seeing that there was a smidge of history. I mean, when we ran the podcast on that, I think this thread was probably just barely a week old. So I didn't even catch wind of any of it. And yeah, I do have to say the Decodium dark mode is the best looking dark mode I've seen on all of them. I think everyone could take a hint from how that is done. Because like with WSJTX and WSJTX Improved, the dark mode is kind of meh. The text is like white on top of a colored background and you can barely read the text. I have to change all the foreground colors to black to make it look better. There's some pop over labels on the buttons on the latest WSJTX improved version that don't line up with what the actual button does. So there's a few things that can be fixed over there as well. And I had mentioned to Anno as well in the past that it's like there has been some rift between people doing derivative works on WSJTX in general because they didn't like people doing releases on their intermediate releases. So like when WSJTX was doing an RC release, they didn't want anybody like pushing out, you know, JTDX, RC, blah, 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 blah. And technically is also a violation of the GPLv3. I mean, you release the source code and tag it, it's all fair game at that point. It's available for derivative works without restraint. I mean, you could ask, but you can't tell people that, you can't do that. I mean, I guess you can say that. It's free speech, right? But anyway, so that was my fun jaunt into all of this land. And that video I did with Omarchi actually had Decodium's version running, and it seemed to work okay. I'd actually got two contacts with it since I tried this new version, this 3.10. I don't think I have heard but just a couple of stations on FT2 at all, so not quite as popular. Maybe more over in Europe they're using it, because I don't see a lot of activity locally here, and when I do hear something, it is definitely a European station.
Well, hopefully people in the US will start using it.
Yeah, now that it has like an official open source release and everybody can go to sleep at night and some of it kind of felt a little bit like outrage collection in the Reddit,
Nice.
I'm just outraged. This is just crazy. And so, like, people do this all the time. I mean, have you not seen an LLM lately, which basically rips off everything that anybody has ever written?
Right.
let's hold some of that outrage for what's actually to be coming. It's interesting times ahead. Interesting times ahead. Yeah. Well, on that note, why don't we go into announcements and feedback, Cheryl?
Woohoo! All righty then. So we've got four different things here. One, we can always use your help supporting the show. And you can support us via Patreon, PayPal, buy merch, whatever you want to do. We desperately need topics. Weekender topics, anything goes. Food, cars, whatever you want. You know, give us something to talk about. You know, it doesn't have to be computer related. Doesn't have to be ham radio related, but throw us some bones. And we do need ideas for things you'd like to hear about in the deep dive episodes. So you can email any suggestions you've got to info@lhspodcast.info. If you haven't already heard us mention it a few zillion times at this point, we're going to be at Hamvention, which is May 15th through the 17th, 2026, at the Greene County Fairgrounds in Xenia, Ohio, which is a fairly large suburb. Sure, we'll call it a suburb, a day. So, and our last thing is I'm hosting a memorial service for Russ, K5TUX, here at our house in Missouri. So if you'd like to join us, just pop us an email at the info@lhspodcast.info, and we will, either Bill or I will answer you and give you date, time, directions, whatever you need. So,
yeah, that's on November 1st, right?
Yes, November 1st, yeah. And you'll get to meet, provided nothing happens, Bill and I both on that day, because Bill's planning on being here as well. So,
yes, yes, yes. So. And that gets us to our subscribers and Patreons. And I'll go through this to give Cheryl a break real quick. We didn't get anybody new from Patreon, but we did get a PayPal subscriber, Jonathan Traum. Thank you for your PayPal. No free Patreons joined. Facebook, nothing new. Instagram, we'll wait and see. We're going to get those accounts connected so we can see the stats better on those two. Twitter, we did have T.S. Ham join us. Over on Mastodon, we had OSIOU, BJB, VZ5ZSH, Jessica Dale, and Jorn Frank. And on Blue Sky, I think we're going to not track that one anymore, because I believe it can probably pick up posts from Mastodon at some point. So it will probably just not mention that going forward, and we'll track it, because I'm not going to do 10,000 social media accounts. And our live show participants, we had Dan, KB6NU, and Steve, KJ5T. Thank you for joining us. And I'm just going to go through a chat room here. We were discussing my antenna problems, and let's see. Steve was asking, and I was debating on getting one or putting up an off-center fed dipole. Need more bandwidth on 80 than the 6 BTV gives me, and tired of my other low-hanging wires on 12 and 17. Wish my arm was stronger to get the wires in the trees higher. Awesome, awesome. Yeah. I have some trees in my yard too, and I just use a kid's fishing pole and a weight on it and some heavy line because it's small and I kind of give it a quick whip. So that's what I use to kind of get the wire up into the tree and stuff like that. And that's been pretty good. You just got to be careful you don't have too big of a weight on there and your neighbor's house isn't too terribly close. And you know, in case the weight flies off and ends up in their window or something like that. Tie very good knots. So that brings us down to the end. So we'll let Cheryl close us out.
Well, actually, I'm going to add this real quick. If you need somebody to do an antenna for you, Bill does a really good one, because I had a very large tree limb ricochet off the one he just put back up that Russ lost due to a tree limb last fall. I was standing on my porch. The antenna is still in the tree. I was standing on the porch watching that limb fall, go, don't hit the line. Don't hit the line. Oh, it just hit the line. And I was waiting for it to drop, but it's still up in the tree and it still looks like it's still well tethered up there. Yeah. So you did a great job.
Awesome. Everything is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. So we are now at the end of the show. So thanks everyone for listening, and we will catch you in 1 week with our deep dive episode. So this has been episode 610 of Linux in the Ham Shack. For us, K52X, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.